This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 50 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And technically, this is our one-year anniversary of The Girlfriend Bracket. We released our first episode on March 9th, 2015.
Booyah.
Can you guys believe it's been a year already?
Nope.
No. It's gone by way too fast.
I mean, when you think about it, we started this show with no logo. We were using like a stock photo from Photo Bucket. We had no idea where this thing was going to go. And now here we are sitting in front of really fancy microphones and with stickers with our faces on them. And I just can't believe that we're here.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. And we have somebody with us to celebrate this momentous occasion. We talked about her on the show. She's incredibly awesome. Chris and I had the pleasure of hanging out with her at GP Detroit. You probably know her. She's a popular Twitch streamer and a goddess of the merfolk. She is Mrs. Mulligan. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Of course. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, we're definitely big fans of yours. I know as we were talking about before the show, you've really kind of blown up.
Right. It's been surprising. It's a whirlwind ride.
So for somebody who doesn't know who you are, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Okay, well, I stream Magic the Gathering or Magic Online or whatever on Twitch under Mrs._Mulligan. So if you want to find me there. But I mostly play Merfolk. I'm starting to get back into Standard.
Okay. And where did the name Mrs. Mulligan come from?
Oh, okay. So Carrick and I were talking about opening a card and game shop after we retire. And we're like, well, let's think of cool names or whatever. And it was ended up being Mr. and Mrs. Mulligan's cards and games or something like that. And so that had come up in the back of conversation and it just kind of stuck. And I was like, I need a handle. Mrs. Mulligan came out. So
yeah, that's actually really savvy of you. And one of the things I really admire about you is you seem to have a really good, I guess, for lack of a better term, business sense when it comes to your stream. Like you've been really good about coming up with a name, sticking to a brand. You know, you're known for playing Merfolk and you're very driven in making your stream grow. And I feel like that's something we don't really see a lot of.
Well, I'm kind of a perfectionist. So whenever I do anything, I want to do it really well. But Carrick is very tech savvy. So that helped out a lot with getting all of those details set up very well.
Okay, and Carrick's your husband.
Yes, sorry.
Okay, that's okay. Just wanted people to know what was going on. So, yeah. And when did you start playing Magic?
I started playing during M15, so it's been about a year and a half now.
Okay, and what you said you prefer Modern, but you're getting into Standard.
Right, so I started out with going to events and things with Khans of Tarkir Draft. I worked my way up to Standard and back up to Modern, but now that I'm doing more grinding and being more competitive, I need to get myself back into Standard. So I've started doing I had a janky Hardened Skills deck and all of a sudden it became tier one. So I was like, I'll buy the Nissas and now I can have a tier one Standard deck. So
that's kind of how I feel with Living End lately, where I played Living End when it was still very much a joke. And ever since Eldrazi Winter started, Living End has become good again. And it's just like, what? I'm playing a good deck? Like, what? So it's always a great feeling when that happens. One of the things we like to ask our guests when they come on the show is, what has your experience been like as a lady Magic player?
That's interesting. So most of the time, it's not really been... There hasn't been anything to do with me being a woman or not. Occasionally, especially when I first started playing, they're like, I can't believe you got beat by a girl or whatever. You know how friends will say that to each other, which was frustrating. But I just, wouldn't take any shit and kept going and kept beating them. So it stopped pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually really cool because that's something that can keep a lot of people down. Mm-hmm. And so it's really great that you sort of persevered through that and that you definitely came out on top. Like I said, you're doing quite well for yourself. You're nearing 3,000 Twitch followers or right. subscribers. You're at over 1,000 followers on Twitter. It's really great to see you come out ahead.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Yeah, and we're excited to have you here.
Thanks.
So, Hallie, you were not here last week, and we definitely missed you.
No. Yeah, I missed you guys, too.
So we're going to go ahead and start off with you. Do you want to talk a little bit about GP Houston, or do you want to talk about your PPTQ that you went to?
I could talk about both or either. It's fine. GP Houston was actually a lot of fun. I played Bant Coco, which was a deck that I've been playing for about 2 weeks now. I played it on our last group stream. And it's the first deck that I've really enjoyed playing in Standard for a while, so even though I didn't have a ton of preparation with it, I wanted to take it to a big event and see just how I could do with it. And I lost my win and in for day two, but I was doing pretty well, and considering that I don't play a ton of Standard, I was actually happy with just how well I was playing and how good a sense I had of the metagame, given how much I've been focusing on Limited instead of Standard. So I had a really good time in Houston. I got to meet Jadine Klimperens and really clicked with her. I got to meet Serena Quinn, who was lovely. And I just made so many friends and had such a great experience. I stayed with three judges, our friend Johnny Bailey, who's been on the show before, Crystal Rose, and Katie Aber. And we just had a really good time. So I was really glad I got to go to Houston. And I also played in a PPTQ this past weekend, again, with Bant Company, and I made top 8, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yay!
Yay!
You also participated in, there was some sort of reveal with the Lady Planeswalker Society?
So, on Saturday, a bunch of us were told to meet Tifa at Card Kingdom for a super secret project. We had received an email a couple weeks prior asking us if we wanted to participate in this project, but we weren't really told what it was or what was happening. We just knew that we had to meet Tifa at an appointed place at an appointed time and open a package that was coming from Wizards, and we didn't know what it was. A lot of us suspected that it had something to do with the Shadow over Innistrad spoilers, but, you know, it wasn't something that we were really, you know, at liberty to discuss. So we just sort of showed up and, you know, lo and behold, it was a box. It was a little wooden box I think it was like Avacyn's symbol on it, and we opened it live on Mike and Tifa's stream. And we didn't really know what it was going to be going into it. Some of us thought it might be a spoiler card, but it turned out it was actually a puzzle that was a clue for viewers to figure out what the new spoiler card was going to be. So we open up the box, like Tifa and I are like pulling the rope like off the box at the same time, and we open it up and there's a candle on it. And we're just like, okay, this isn't a card, this is clearly some kind of a puzzle. There's like a little note that says, like, there's something beneath the surface. And we're like, okay, this is really weird. So, of course, we just ask, you know, who has a lighter? We have to light this candle and melt it down and see what's inside of it. And so we light the candle at both ends, and, like, there's an LPS playmat on the table, and we're making a huge mess, and we're just like, okay, there has to be an easier way to do this. And then someone else who's around notices that there's, like, a line down the middle of the candle. So then we ask, okay, who has a knife? So Tifa's friend Jessie has, like, a pocket knife. So we cut through the candle, and there's a little tiny metal capsule in the middle of it. And we're trying to open it. It took, like, three of us to open the capsule because it's just coated in wax. So we're all just, like, trying to scratch the wax off the capsule. We finally get it open. And there's a tiny piece of parchment paper wrapped up inside of it that has all these, like, runic symbols on it. And apparently Wizards had posted, like, a key to these symbols and what they mean on their Twitter account. So we held it up to the camera and we were sort of helping them decipher it. Apparently there were a bunch of symbols in order, and each of them formed a letter. And so the the word, the six-letter word that was revealed, was eventually Cathar. So the viewers had to send an email to cathar@wizards.com, and they revealed a pretty awesome card. So it was a long process, but it was a lot of fun. I didn't realize that I was going to be on stream for most of it, but that kind of took me by surprise, but I was really happy to be front and center for that. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. A bunch of people actually got to draft like while we were there, which was pretty cool. And it was really awesome. Like, I was really honored that Wizards gave us that opportunity to do that, and we just had a blast.
Yeah, they've certainly been killing it with all of the Shadows Over Innistrad stuff, which we'll talk about a little later at the GP, of course. But yeah, this is just amazing. And it kind of reminds me of Russian dolls, where it's like, so you get rid of the big doll, and there's the middle doll, and there's the little doll. So you boil off the wax, then you need a knife, and then you need string, and then you need just to get the clue. And that's so awesome.
Right.
Yeah. So did being around, so when you were in Texas and you said you got to hang out with Serena and Jadine, who are mm-hmm. very competitive women, you know, mm-hmm. did being around them kind of inspire you to, because I know you've been trying to kind of break through, mm-hmm. and I know that you haven't necessarily had, you know, real access to women that want the same thing that you do. So, you know, did you gain any sort of motivation from being around them, or did you learn anything from them?
Absolutely, yeah. Talking to Jadine was really great because she was also playing Bant Coco, so she had a lot of advice for me, which was really valuable. And just being able to talk to other women about their experiences as women playing Magic was really great for me. And, you know, being able to, you know, have that camaraderie and feel like I wasn't alone was really awesome. So, you know, I've actually kept in touch with them, you know, in the week that has transpired, and a bunch of us have been talking about, you know, testing online more often, and it seems like, you know, it's not just like, oh, I'm going to meet them this one time and then that's it. Like, it seems like they're willing to help me up the ladder, which is something that I have not always had from players who I consider to be better than me. A lot of people in the Seattle community, and which is something that frustrates me from time to time, is that, you know, a lot of people will see me and they'll see that, you know, I'm a decent player, but I'm not that experienced, and they won't be interested in necessarily, like, helping me or, you know, testing with me or anything like that. And it's been really refreshing to have, you know, other accomplished players look at me and say, like, hey, you have potential, you know, why don't you test with me sometime?
It sounds like you found your tribe, so to speak.
I know. I'm really happy about this.
And it's ironic because that was the whole goal of you starting the Facebook group. Like, when you started the Ladies on the Grind Facebook group, that's what you wanted to happen. Like, you wanted women to find that resource that they weren't getting at home. And it sounds like you kind of, you know, achieved your own goal.
Yeah. It was the sort of thing where I didn't have a group. And so I was just like, okay, maybe I can make one. Maybe I can organically form one. And I'm really glad that that's happened.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm so happy for you. Katie, you did some streaming this past weekend, yeah?
I did. Yes.
How did that go?
So Friday night, I decided to stream, and I did one Oath of the Gatewatch stream, which I thought I had a pretty solid deck. I drafted a green-white support, which is what I had drafted the previous week at my local game store. And it seemed pretty good, but in my first round... I played against somebody who took every support card I didn't take, and then they also had a bunch of removal, and I just kind of got run over. They were playing, like, a bunch of allies, and they had the guy that gave them all first strike and the guy that gave them all vigilance, so it was, like, vigilance, first strike, every single turn. So we lost in three there. The only game we won was where he didn't play any land. And then I did a Kamigawa flashback draft, which was a lot of fun. I had no idea what any of the cards did, because this was before my Magic time. And I was streaming with Kobe, so he was kind of helping me. He'd already done a few that week, and so he was like, well, this is what this card does, and this is kind of what we're doing in this format. And I was like, okay. But we drafted a black-white deck that made us take a lot of damage, but just kind of had solid creatures. So we drafted a lot of really crappy 1-1 white guys for one. And then we had two of this, I don't know the names of any of these cards, but there were these 3-4 flyers for four that made you bounce a white creature at the beginning of every upkeep. But it seemed like a lot of the creatures, since it was an older style of magic, were just kind of underpowered for how much they cost. So having a 3-4 flyer for four was pretty top-notch. And then we played four of this same card that was a 3-3 for three, and every time you attacked or blocked with it, you lost a life. And so one game, I mean, the card was great because a lot of people had 2-2s and 2-1s and just little creatures that didn't do a lot. But one game, we, like, go down to six, and I was like, they haven't even been hitting us. And then I was like, oh, yeah, we're playing three of these guys. And then we also had Kokosho, which is obviously just a very good magic card. But we ended up going 3-0 somehow. I was not confident in the draft at all. After we were, like, building, I was like, well, let's get ready to draft again. But it ended up going well. It was fun. We went to Perkins and got milkshakes afterwards, so it was a good evening.
Well, that's how to do it.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you've been getting more comfortable streaming, and has your audience been growing?
Our audience on Friday was not super big. We had our good old standby, Rao Morney, who's a viewer who just always watches and is supportive. But there wasn't a lot going on Friday. I do feel like I'm getting more comfortable streaming. The first draft that I did, I drafted alone, and then the guys showed up after that. But I'm going to try drafting alone more. It's just kind of weird to talk to yourself a lot and try and be entertaining. So I need to get better at that, but I'm sure that'll come with time.
Maybe Mrs. Mulligan can give you some tips.
I would love that.
I just talk to myself all the time anyway, so it just kind of comes naturally.
Are you an only child, Mrs. M?
No, I have a younger brother, but I was told that as soon as I said my first word, I have never shut up since. And my brother, like, never got a word in edgewise when we were kids either.
Because when you said it, when you implied you were comfortable talking to yourself, I know I'm an only child, and, you know, when you don't have any siblings, you get very used to playing by yourself and having conversations with yourself, and so that's why I just assumed that you were like me. So there were three modern GPs this weekend on three different continents. There was GP Melbourne, GP Bologna, and GP Detroit. And Blue-White Eldrazi won two of them. The top eight of Melbourne consisted of two copies of Blue-White Eldrazi, four copies of Living End. What?
Yeah.
I know, right?
What kind of parallel universe are we in? One Abzan Company and one copy of Dredge. Hey.
What?
It's relevant to my interests. Well, thank you. In GP Bologna, it was three copies of Blue-White Eldrazi, two copies of Red-Green Eldrazi, one Living End, one Affinity, and one Bant Company. And in Detroit, four Blue-White Eldrazi, two Green-Red Eldrazi, one Storm, and one copy of Abzan Coco, which ended up winning the whole damn thing. Mrs. Mulligan, you were in Detroit with us, so why don't you start off, how was your GP experience?
I had a lot of fun at this GP. I was the closest to day two that I've gotten before. I was doing a win and in for day two, and I ended up 5-4, which was disappointing, but I almost made it, and I had a lot of really great matches. And then I did a bunch of drafts the next day, so that was really fun.
How did you fare against the Eldrazi? Did you face it at all?
Yeah, I had two matches against Eldrazi, so I played against Red Green and promptly just got stomped and squashed by it. And then I played, I think it was Blue White, and it was just kind of a back and forth that I finally got the better end of.
Did you feel like there was a combination? Because I faced so many different flavors of Eldrazi. You know, there's the colorless build. I faced Black Green a couple of times. There was Blue White. There was Green Red. Was there a version that you felt better against going into the GP, or were you just kind of, were you ready for it at all?
As playing Merfolk, I'm not that worried about Eldrazi. If they get, like, the best draws and everything, then they're just going to take us down. But generally, I have an acceptable matchup rate against them, maybe, like, 45 to 55, you know, 45 for Merfolk, which obviously isn't great, but it's better than most other decks playing against Eldrazi. And so I had, like, I changed up some stuff. I had some gut shots in my sideboard. I had a couple other things, but generally I didn't have to change much of my strategy for Eldrazi.
Was there a certain color combination that you felt better against, like the green-red version or the blue-white version?
Not in particular. The white version was maybe a little more irritating to play against because of the displacer and stuff. Mm-hmm. But generally it was, or the flyers, the blue flyers were sometimes frustrating.
Yeah.
But if I can get my creatures on the battlefield and then they grow and then I swim underneath with my island walk and all of a sudden, bam, you're dead. So it's a interesting, like, back and forth, but it's always, like, it's a potentially winnable matchup for us.
So it's basically a race.
In a sense, yes, but we also have a little bit of interaction, like when I want to use my dismembers or echoing truths and things like that. So there's some play back and forth in that regard.
Cool. Chris, you took Mono Blutron to the GP. How did you do?
I didn't end up doing so well, unfortunately. I had to face some of my really tough matchups, like, right out of the gate. The first opponent that I played against, he was on Naya Burn. I was able to beat him the first game with a Slaver Lock with Platinum Angel on deck, which was pretty awesome. Then the second game, he just got there faster, and the third game, I just got burned out. But it was really close, so I was like, no. When I was at table 7, I'm like, bye, table 7, we won't be back here. Then I went on to play this gentleman named Vince, who was super awesome and playing Soul Sisters. I ended up sweeping him, but he was just really awesome. He had just come back to playing Magic, I think not that long ago. And he was just, like, super psyched to, like, see what my deck did. You know, he said that he felt that I piloted it very well, that he's like, you outplayed me. He's like, you got me. He was just, like, I don't know. He was just, like, really, like, in awe of, like, everything. It was pretty nice. And we had some good conversations, and I told him about the show. So, Vince, if you're listening, you were really awesome to play against. And so that was fun. Then I went on to promptly get stomped by Infect. It was, like, I blinked and I was dead, so that was a little unfortunate. Then I played this nice young lady named Audrey, and she was playing Affinity. She had, from what I understand, never played Modern before the previous night, and a friend of hers gave her the Affinity deck and was teaching her how to play it. She's more skilled with Limited and I think Standard, or not a Standard, EDH. And so this was, like, her first, I think, big foray into Modern. She was just able to, like, put the screws to me. I was kind of, like, surprised that she put in Ensnaring Bridge versus me, but I was like, okay, you know, that might be a thing. I mean, it definitely added to her artifacts that she had on deck. So I lost to her out of 3, but I was really psyched that after we played, we were going to go walk off, do our own thing, and she asked me if I would give her any advice about how to beat my deck in the future, and I was like, okay. So I told her, you know, some different things that she could do, and, like, looked at, like, we talked about, like, her sideboard, and about what I typically bring in, and, like, changes I've made to the deck, and different things that different people do, and so that was really cool. And so we got to talk for a little bit, and she was really nice, and her friend was hanging out with us too, so that was really cool. And then I went on to play, like, a green-red burn deck that I had never really faced before, but it was using my new Bay Kiln Fiend. Mine just came in the mail, so I'm pretty excited. I got to negative 15 with Angel on deck and was able to beat him the first game. The second game, he got me, and then the third game, it went to turns, and I beat him in turn 5. So that was pretty nerve-wracking. And then the last game that I played, I ended up getting blown out by an Esper Mentor-ish brew. And at that point, I was kind of like, I'm a little done. Like, I need to step away. I wasn't having much fun anymore, so I was like, okay, I'm just going to drop and kind of reevaluate what else I want to do. So I kind of went and hung out for a little bit, got some cards signed, which was really nice. and got some stuff from the Hallelujah booth, which was really cool. I was really happy to see them there, got to meet a lot of awesome people, and it was just such a great experience. And I probably think the highlight of the GP for me, while the Avison thing was really awesome, and I will talk about that, was meeting all the fans and the listeners and people that love the show so much. So shout out to David, Kevin, Audrey, and Sam, and anyone else that I forgot. It was really awesome to meet all of you, sign your playmats, sign your cards, and thank you so very much for making my weekend so awesome. The Avison reveal was really cool. I actually went to it with our listener friend David. We waited outside. They brought us in a line, had us go into the inside of the cathedral. And then we all sat down on these little pews, and there's candles in there, and like ripped tapestries, and you know, there's the the colored glass and everything, and there's bloody feathers all over the place, and it was just a very like eerie scene. But it was just so cool to kind of sit in there before they showed us the trailer and just kind of experience everything that you were looking at and just kind of take it all in. Then we watched the trailer for Shadows Over Innistrad, and it was really awesome because they were, you know, showing Jace being all like investigatory, and it just kind of harkened back to like Lovecraftian horror and stuff like that. So I was super into that. And then the next thing I knew, there was like this really loud bang, and everyone like acted like they were gonna shit their pants, and we all turn around, and all of a sudden like Springs to Sarah Zavison, and she looks really mad, and I'm just like, this is very bad right now. And it was just such an awesome reveal, and then we followed her out of the cathedral, and it was just really cool. Like, I was really pleased with how Wizards is going about marketing Shadows Over Innistrad, and how they've been spoiling cards and just everything, and I am just super psyched to play with the set when it finally comes out.
Yeah. We actually did a road trip. Chris and I did the 5-hour drive, and we left on Friday morning, and the 5 hours went by really fast. Like, it didn't feel like a drive at all. Like, we had a lot of fun singing and stopping at crazy places and having a lot of fun. And so we went to F&M first. We went to F&M at a really nice store called Pandemonium Games, a very spacious store, a very clean store. We were very, very happy to be there. They were under construction. They had literally just bought a women's clinic. There was a women's clinic that was next to it that was no longer there, and so they bought that space and they were expanding, and I thought it was really cool that the space they were expanding into used to be a women's clinic. We ended up playing Modern F&M. I didn't do very well. I did so poorly that I lost to Hardened Scales in Modern. Let that sink in for a minute. I lost my first round, and then I won my first round, lost my second, and then my next opponent, you know, he was like, hi, and I see a turn one Warden of the First Tree. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The and one I'm that like, kind of levels up.
Right, and I'm like, okay. So I'm trying not to be judgy. I'm trying not to whatever. I'm like, I'm keeping an open mind. I'm like, maybe it's a thing for hate bears. I don't know. And all of a sudden, he goes, Abzan Falconer. And I'm going, wait a minute, this is a standard deck. But I didn't say anything. I was just like, I kept it all inside. And then all of a sudden he plays Hardened Scales. And all of a sudden he plays this enchantment. And I'm like, I'm playing against a standard deck. So as luck would have it, I didn't find any of my combo pieces. And then I lost to said standard deck. And then when it was over, I dropped. And I was like, Chris, we need to go to Taco Bell because I just lost to a standard deck. And I need to eat my shame.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was just like, this is kind of embarrassing. But he was really, really nice. He was really, really happy. So I didn't do anything to really rain on his parade. But I was like, that's okay. We'll get all of the bad juju out tonight. And then I will go to the GP and I will kill it. So we went to the GP. I had one by. I played Eldrazi 5 times out of 8 games. Huh. So, and I played every flavor of Eldrazi. I tasted the Eldrazi rainbow. I played blue-white. I played black-white. I played black-green. And I was just so fucking over it by the end of the day. And not because the deck was powerful. I mean, the deck was capable of doing dumb things, but it was just the fact that that's all I saw. That's all I saw. And I saw Scapeshift once, which I beat. I played Affinity twice, lost to it once, but that was literally my day. 5 games of Eldrazi, 2 games of Affinity, and 1 game of Scapeshift. And I don't even want to play a deck I like that many times. I was just so over it. And the thing I found really interesting is that all of my Eldrazi opponents were fucking miserable. And I don't mean miserable people. I mean, like, they hated the deck. Like, there wasn't a single person that was like, I'm having fun doing this. They were all like, yeah, we're pretty miserable, but the deck wins, so that's why we're playing it. You know, I didn't have a single person that was like, this is so much fun. I'm really glad I'm playing this. They were all just deeply unhappy, like every last one of them. And I thought that was very interesting because when I played Scapeshift, he was genuinely having a ball playing the deck. And he talked about how much he loved the deck. Even one of my Affinity guys was just like, you know, I've been playing it for a long time. Affinity's really my jam. And everybody who played Eldrazi just looked like they were being forced to do it. And I felt kind of bad at that point where I'm like, huh, that kind of says something when you're not even enjoying what you do and you're playing it simply because of just because it's so overpowered.
I tested and played Eldrazi a couple of times for about maybe a week and a half, and at first it was like I could feel the broken power of it, and it was like really invigorating, and then it was just the same thing over and over again, and I'm like, this is not fun. This is not where I want to be. So I jumped back to the Merfolk train, went back to the Gate Watch. So,
yeah, so I definitely thought that was very interesting. So I did end up making day two. I finished 6-3. That was my first ever day two. I was super, super excited. It was very interesting showing up for day two. Like, I mean, the atmosphere was different. 702 people made day two. I was one of three women that I saw. There might have been more, and I just didn't see them. But I counted me, Lexi Mettler, who we talked about on the show, and another young lady. And I won the first game, proceeded to lose the next two, and then I dropped because I was starting to tilt at that point, and I wasn't very happy. But the experience was awesome. It did kind of awaken feelings in me that I hadn't really felt before, where I've kind of talked on the show about the fact that I've struggled with the fact that I'm not good. You know, when I was playing World of Warcraft before I came back to Magic, I was really good. Like, I was a top-end raider. I was contributing to theory crafting. And there's a certain privilege that comes with being good at something. You know, the way that people treat the pros is very different than how they treat personalities. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like since I've been playing Magic, I have yet to really experience that kind of privilege where I'm good at podcasting, I'm good at being a personality, but I've never known what it's like to be good as a player for as long as I've been playing Magic. And that's something that I've really missed. You know, I've really missed that feeling of being good at the game like I was with World of Warcraft. And when I made day two, I felt kind of like my old self again. Like, I felt like I could maybe get a taste of that again, where it's like, you were a really good raider, maybe you can be a really good Magic player, maybe you can day two a GP, maybe you can top 32 a GP. And it did kind of light a fire under me where I was like, I definitely want to be back here again. Like, I want to be here again, I want to do this again. And I'm not really sure how I'm going to go about making that happen, but it definitely made me want to be more competitive, knowing that I could do such a thing. So I was pretty pleased. But the deck felt good. I learned a lot throughout the weekend. I learned a lot in particular with my sideboarding. I realized, you know, with Jund, I have to pretty much mulligan to Leyline of Sanctity. I think I found a really good sideboard plan for Eldrazi. And I just learned a lot. And I know that's something Kale talked about when she made her first day too. And she was like, you know, I didn't really stay for the whole thing, but I did learn a lot. And I certainly did too. So with the Eldrazi being so dominant this weekend, you know, they had Aaron Forsyth on for a little bit. And he talked a little bit about what, you know, where the format's going to go from here. Do you think it's safe to say that this was kind of like the nail in the coffin and that something's going to get banned?
I think it's been pretty clear that something is going to be banned for quite a while now. And there have been comments that Aaron has posted, like, on Twitter and things saying, we're not doing an emergency ban, but, like, it sounded like he was implying a ban was coming with SOI.
So now it comes down to what exactly it's going to be, because I've seen some discussion about, you know, it could be Eldrazi Temple, it could be Eye of Ugin, it could be both. You know, Hallie and Katie is more of our spikier girls on the stream. You know, what do you think it's going to be?
I think both or either would be warranted. I mean, I think a lot of the complaints about the format, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, oh, let's wait and see if the format adjusts. Let's see, you know, if there are more GPs. There are more, give the format time to adjust to this. Let people sideboard for it. But you can't adjust to fast mana. I think I've said this on the show before. Like, fast mana is what propels this deck over the edge, and I think it's going to have to be one or both of those. I'm not sure. We'll leave it in Wizards' hands, but I think without some kind of adjustment made to the mana base, the deck is going to continue to be as dominant as it's been.
I would agree. I think if you just do one, the deck will still exist. And so I'm kind of worried that if they just... I mean, I kind of don't want it to be a thing anymore, so I'd be in favor of both of them being banned. But I am glad that we are seeing some other decks crop up. Like, when is the last time that we saw Living End, Storm, and Dredge all top 8 in the same weekend? Like,
mm-hmm. Right?
Has it ever happened? I'm pretty excited that, like, those things are cropping up, but these results don't make me want to play Modern right now.
Yeah, Aaron Forsyth, you know, they did an interview with him. He was at GP Detroit, and he was kind of talking about, you know, the format. And he said that they want Eldrazi to still be a thing, that they don't want to completely nuke the deck from orbit. They just don't want it to be as powerful as it is right now. And so, you know, I don't mind if it's a deck, if it's a tier 2 deck or whatever, or if it exists in some form, but I can agree that in its current state, and like I said, I'm not even, for my deck personally, I didn't feel like it was overpowered per se. For me, it was just the sheer fact that I was playing it so many times that really made me not have a good time. But I would be okay with either or being banned. I don't really have a preference. I did find it interesting when they interviewed him and he was like, "This is the kind of thing that only happens once every 5 years." And I was like, excuse me, Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise would like to have a word with you, because that was last year. So that wasn't really, that's not every 5 years. And, you know, I do feel like he openly admitted on stream that they just don't test for Modern. Like, it was a flat no. Like, BBD was like, "Do you guys, you know," or BDM was like, "Do you guys even test the older formats?" He's like, "No." And I feel like, you know, going forward, I feel like they do need to devote some kind of resources to this, because now we're looking at two different blocks where it's like you have Khan's block, which had Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time. You have this block where even though the cards from the block aren't responsible, it's still not gelling well with cards that are already in existence. And so you know, when you have two blocks back to back that have caused this reaction, when it used to be something that happened once every 5 years, I think that might be a sign that you might need to change up the game a little bit, where devote some resources to it, because I'd hate to think that something from Innistrad block is going to cause this to happen again.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it would only take, you know, two people also. Like, you'd have two people working with the new cards, testing just Modern and Legacy, seeing if they can break it, that kind of stuff. You only need maybe two of the pros or two other, like, really good players who know the format, and they can play the meta deck against these other decks that they're trying to put together, and they'll find if something is completely out of whack, and they can be prepared for it when it's released. They can say, "Hey, these cards are super cool, but they're going to break Modern, so we're going to go ahead and stick them on the ban list now," kind of thing.
Well, he gave a lot of credit to Channel Fireball, because he was like, you know, these guys had a lot more time to focus on this deck than we ever could have. And, you know, when you give the pros 2 weeks to a month or however long it takes them to prepare, and you give them these cards, they're able to really kind of break them. And he said that had we had the time to look at these cards in conjunction with Eldrazi Temple and Eye of Ugin, maybe we could have seen this coming and maybe we could have adjusted course, but we just didn't have the time and the energy to do that. And so he really kind of gave them their credit to, you know, seeing something that they didn't. And it was really cool of him to acknowledge that.
I mean, absolutely. I'm just thinking, like, two people were full time. That was their job, is here's a pile of the new cards. See if you can break the, like, the older formats and, like, the bigger formats. So it would be, you know, it would be two more people on staff or whatever, and they'd be able to go from there and get some more information about them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how many people, you know, would be necessary. I think two is certainly possible, but I think the bottom line is they have to start devoting some resources towards this, because I think just having none is just not really, you know, possible at this point.
Sure.
Spoiler season has begun. Chris mentioned the big Avacyn reveal at the GP Detroit, and we've seen we saw the escape rooms across three different GPs, and people who completed them were able to unlock clues, which led to cards being revealed. Avacyn has gone bad. which I think was the biggest reveal of all. People are dying to know how we got here and what's causing this change in her. They released a post today on the Mothership talking about the new mechanics, which we're certainly going to talk about now. Double face cards are back.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they made some changes to the rules where they no longer, the casting cost is now going to be based on what the original card was. So for example, if you have something like Engineered Explosives and you try to do it for zero, it's not going to kill a flipped Delver anymore. The Delver's casting cost is still going to be one, even though that is flipped. And I think that was the biggest rules change with those cards.
Mm-hmm.
And they also mentioned something about the not being able to flip-flop the cards. Where, like, so for example, if it says if no spells were cast last turn, like responding to that trigger or something like that, and just being able to do broken things with the cards. So it sounds like they're trying to make them better for everybody and easier to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They also mentioned the mechanic called Delirium, which is kind of like a Tarmogoyf-like effect, where it's the card itself. So for example, there's a card called Soul Swallower, which is 2/2 green. It's a 3/3 worm with trample, which looks basic enough, but if it has Delirium, which at the beginning of your upkeep, if there are 4 or more card types among cards in your graveyard, you can put 3+1/+1 counters on Soul Swallower. Quick question about that, Katie. Do you think that this is something that you do at every upkeep or just like the first upkeep?
I think it happens every time it's your upkeep on your turn. So every upkeep, I think it'll happen again.
Oh, so you're saying that you could put counters on this thing every upkeep?
Yep. I believe so. Mm-hmm.
That's gross.
Yeah, I'm super stoked about this card. I cannot wait.
I couldn't figure out why people were so excited. I was like, well, it's a worm and it's trample. Like, okay. And now that you put it that way, I'm like, okay, I'm in. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
They also mentioned the ability called Investigate and Clues. So Investigate is something, so there's a creature called Thraben and Inspector. Is it Thraben or Thraben?
Thraben.
I say Thraben, but I think you could say either.
Okay, we'll go with Thraben then, so I'm not the odd man out. So there's Thraben Inspector, which is a 1/2 creature for 1 white. When Thraben Inspector enters the battlefield, investigate. And you put a colorless clue artifact token onto the battlefield with 2 colorless, sacrifices, artifact, draw a card. So investigate is a new ability as well. And then something called Madness, which was an older ability. Like, we've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one where when you, it gives a card an alternate casting cost. So if you discard this card, discard it into exile, and when you do, you can cast it for its madness cost. When you do, cast it for its madness cost or put it in your graveyard. So for example, there's a card called Just the Wind, which is dripping with flavor, by the way. It costs 1/1 blue, and it says return target creature to its owner's hand. However, if you have to discard this card, you can pay blue, just 1 blue, and you get the same effect, which I think is really cool. You can see in the cards that they've spoiled, there's a lot of cards that allow you to discard a card, which means that this is going to play really well with Madness. There's also been some talk about Jace being really good with Madness.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to Jace was
probably the most commonly referenced non-Shadows Over Innistrad card in Matt Tabak's mm-hmm. article, which I found hilarious.
He's back up to $100.
Oh, good.
Not surprised.
Yeah. I have my 3, and I have no intentions of getting a 4th. I'm like, I'm good. There's also an ability called Skulk, which I think we've seen before, too. And Skulk says this creature can't be blocked by creatures with greater power. So it's kind of like, you know, Intimidate or Menace or something like that. And it looks like that's about it. What do you guys think of these mechanics? What do you guys think of the set?
I'm excited.
I thought it was hilarious that last week I was talking about how I wish, like, the clue stones and stuff had seen more play in Standard. And then they came out with this Investigate thing, so I'm really hoping that that's, you know, keeps being a thing. Because I love drawing cards.
Katie the Investigator Neal.
Yes!
Listener question this week. Be sure to send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. We have a listener question all the way from Switzerland. Go ahead and put that thumbtack on the world map. And this email is from somebody named Maurice. And Maurice says, "Hey, girls, I've been listening to your show for a while now, and I really enjoy it. You guys offer cool content and interesting discussion topics. At my LGS here in Switzerland, there are only a few female players, so to address that, the store owner has started to give out a booster pack at the end of each event to the best-ranked female player in order for them to have a little more incentive to come back. I think it's a cool way of supporting the small community here. The downside is that some of the younger players don't understand why they would give out booster packs to someone who didn't make top 8, and I've had a young boy tell me that he thinks it's unfair that he didn't get anything, and the lady who didn't do as well as him got a pack. I want to ask what you would have told him, since I don't really think he understood the reasoning behind this, and the issue of a low number of female players in the community. Cheers, and keep on doing what you're doing.
I think, you know, it's, well, especially for younger children, you know, they may or may not be in that, like, girls are smelly, boys are smelly, you know, situation, so they might not, you know, get, you know, till they're older, like, a lot of the, you know, disparity between men and women. But I think I would have just explained to him, be like, you know, there are a low number of women that do play this game, and we want people to come back and feel welcome and feel like what they're doing matters. So by giving them, you know, a pack, that could be an incentive for them to be, to come back, to be like, well, you know, they like having me here. They're showing me that they appreciate my accomplishment, and, you know, maybe try to phrase it to them that way.
I was trying to figure out how I would phrase this or something, and I think it's maybe a little odd that they are giving out packs not based on ranking. I understand that they're, I mean, it's up to the store, they can do whatever they want, right? But, and like, they're trying to incentivize people to come, but I understand where the boy is coming from as well. Because he also, like, if he was a young boy, that's a minority as well. You have a lot of younger players who work really hard and, you know, are not, there's not a lot of people their age necessarily at the event. And they're like, well, I got 9th place. That's really exciting. Why does this other person who is the same as me, same as everybody else in the room, why are they getting something for being 10th place? So I kind of see where he's coming from.
Yeah, I think, I guess explaining to the boy in as simple terms as possible, like, what exactly is going on, you know, in terms of gender, I guess would be a good idea. You know, I think a lot of, when you're a certain age, you don't necessarily see, you know, how society treats men and women differently. It's definitely not something that I was aware of until I was at least a teenager, so I don't think I could, you know, blame him for not being cognizant of that. As far as, like, you know, the actual practices at the store go, and, you know, what my opinion would be of them, I think it's a very well-intentioned move on the owner's part to offer the pack to the top-ranked woman, but I don't know that, you know, it should necessarily just be for the top-ranked player. I think, you know, if you want to get more women into the store, I think offering, you know, a consolation pack to everyone who shows up to the event would probably be a good idea, because there might be other women who show up to the store and go 0-4 at FNM all the time, and then they don't have any incentive to come back. So I think, you know, going a little bit further than that to make your players feel comfortable in the space is probably a good idea.
At my local FNM, they have a relatively flat payout where you get 2 packs per head in the prize pool, and everyone leaves with at least 1 pack. So then they also have what everyone colloquially calls the pity pack. So the person who takes last place gets an extra pack. So this is just kind of different.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about it before, just if this, you know, treating women differently is a good way to get women involved in Magic. And I know that's not necessarily what the question was asking, but at GP Vegas, when they were doing the Walk the Plains Together t-shirts, I thought that was a cool incentive to get, you know, women to wear the t-shirts at the event, and then they paid money to the 2 women who finished the best at the event. And I think that's cool. I'm not really sure why I kind of view it differently for a local game store versus a big Grand Prix. Maybe it's just that a big Grand Prix is more, you know, competitive than an FNM. I'm not convinced it's the best way, because after a time, when you keep pointing out differences, it seems like sometimes that's almost making the differences larger rather than you know, bringing all the players together. And with this person, this boy who's not really, like, understanding, maybe now, instead of viewing everybody as the same, he's like, oh, well, women get special treatment. And maybe that's just, you know, making the overall problem worse. But I liked Chris's explanation for, you know, just saying that there's not a ton of women in the game and we want everybody to feel welcome. But I could see how he would be, you know, upset about that.
I guess my concern would be that if the store is doing that, but they're using it as a way to not work on other areas, where it's like, well, we're going to offer women a pack, but our bathroom is still going to be scummy, and we're still going to have the booby play mats everywhere, and we're not going to keep an eye on language, but we're going to give you a pack. You know what I mean? Where it's like, if you've made an effort everywhere else and you're doing the pack, okay, I could see that. But I worry that the pack is sort of like a lazy attempt to bring women in, when you could do things that aren't that don't involve giving out packs, and you could just as easily get women in the store that way as well. I remember my local game store, I'm not sure if I talked about it on the show or not, but I remember one of my local game stores had started doing a ladies' night F&M. And F&M normally costs about $6. And it was a really competitive store. Like, it was a store where you had to work for the prize support. It was really good prize support. You could win, I think, 10 packs for first place. And so you got a pack just for signing up. And they waived the entry fee for ladies. And so there were maybe me and two other girls that were taking advantage of it. Nothing serious, nothing crazy. And for a while, the guys didn't have a problem with it. And I noticed that the guys didn't have a problem with it when we weren't doing well. So when we weren't winning any packs, when we weren't coming after their loot, they didn't really have a problem with us. They're like, oh, it's just those girls in the corner, whatever. It was only when we started doing well and when we started winning those 10 packs and we started going 4-0 that the guys were like, wait a minute, girl, you didn't have to pay an entry fee. And now here you are getting 10 packs. What the hell's going on? And this was right around the time that Standard was about to rotate. And so I was kind of tired of the Standard format at the time. And so I didn't come back until after rotation happened and a couple weeks had gone by. And I remember going back to my local game store and not expecting to pay because I hadn't paid the last time I was there. And the store owner says to me, you know, we got enough people who complained that we got rid of the ladies' night. And I remember tweeting about it, and I was surprised how many people were, like, okay with that, that were like, yeah, we don't think that was ever really fair, and people who I consider to be, like, allies and good people and things like that were like, yeah, we're not sure that that was really the best approach anyways. And I was like, really? Like, what's the big deal? Like, I worked for these packs, man. Like, you know, I had to play a tier one deck, and I had to beat good people, and, you know, regardless of whether I paid an entry fee or not, I deserve those 10 packs. And I was really surprised by the feedback I received from people that weren't okay with that idea and that felt that it was just not a good way to get women in the store.
I don't think it was necessarily the fact that you were winning and getting the packs as opposed to, like, you were getting different treatment to start with.
But see, then why wasn't that that's the problem I have, though, is that this went by for months. We were doing this for months and no one said anything until we started winning. Like, when we weren't even, like, because you had to, it was a 4-round F&M and you had to at least go 2-2 got you like 2 packs. So, like, nothing crazy, but, like, it was only when you started going 3-0-1 and 3-1 that you were winning, like, money packs, like a lot of packs. Mm-hmm. And when we weren't winning that, we didn't hear a peep. The guys were like, yeah, you know, we're happy to have you here. Or they wouldn't say anything, like they were just totally fine with it. It was only when we started winning packs, that we started winning, like, the good packs, that people started speaking up. And so I felt like that was an obvious connection. And like I said, I was just really surprised by how many people were like, it was probably a bad idea to start with. And I'm still not clear as to why that is, but I've just kind of accepted it for what it is. And so when I read this email and I saw what the store was trying to do, I had a feeling that people weren't going to be cool with it for whatever reason.
Well, and it's, if you want to have women be treated the same, then you don't want to treat them any differently, even if it's in their benefit.
Yeah, it's definitely tricky.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very sticky situation.
Yeah.
It can be right in all kinds of, like, there can be all kinds of solutions that work very well, and it depends on the specific people in the area and what everyone's happy with. You can't just have a blanket answer for everything.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So anything else you want to get off our chest before we wrap up the show?
I'm going to a sealed pre-TQ this weekend.
Ooh. That's cool.
Yeah, so I haven't played Sealed in, since pre-release, so we'll see.
Are you going with a group of friends? Are you going solo?
I'm going with Kobe and Brooke. It's actually going to be at a Hastings in a town a few hours away, and it'll be the first Montana Hastings tournament, so I'm not quite sure what to expect. I've played in the FNM here, and the play area is not impressive. So we will see. We'll see how it goes.
Well, like I always say, whenever I get into situations that I'm not sure of, at least it'll be a great story for the podcast.
For sure. And I might do a stream Friday night to practice maybe one Sealed and, you know, see how that goes. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I wish you good luck with that.
Thanks.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can watch me stream on twitch.tv/HalCanSan, and you can find my writing here on GatheringMagic.com.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or you can find me at Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. Or you can shoot me an email at katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command spelled with K's.
Mrs. Mulligan, do you Snapchat?
I do not.
You do not. All right. Well, Chris and Katie are adamant that we need to be Snapchatting. So I was just curious if you were part of the cult yet.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to avoid that cult.
All right. Just saying. It sounds like it's going to... I still have yet to do it, so I can't really blame you. But Mrs. Mulligan, if anybody enjoyed your appearance on the show as we have, how can they find you and how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. So most of the time you can find me streaming at twitch.tv/Mrs_Mulligan. Or you can find me on Twitter at the Mrs. Mulligan. So feel free to hit me up there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you so much for joining us. Like I said, we got to hang out with you this past weekend, and we thought you were lovely, and we couldn't be happier for all of your success, and we hope that you'll come back on the show sometime.
Absolutely. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find us every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. And you can also email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.